You're in the Stampede, West Virginia Metro News' only show dedicated exclusively to the Thundering Herd. Here's your host, Dave Wilson.
Welcome into the program, Stampede Podcast, presented by WVMetroNews.com and the West Virginia Metro News Radio Network. I'm Dave Wilson. Gang's all here. Clark, Crystal, Ryan. Special edition of the podcast this week. I'll explain why. We'll talk about the Thundering Herd. Doug Smock of the Gazette Mail compares 2007 to this 2016 team, and it's not good. We'll talk about all that and more coming up here on the program. Thanks for downloading the show. You know where to go, iTunes, Podomatic.com, and WVMetroNews.com as well. Follow me on Twitter, at DaveWilsonMN is my Twitter handle, and you can email me anytime, DWilson@WVRadio.com. This is the week that Marshall fans can put a season into perspective. No, this has not been a good year. Two wins at this point in the season is unacceptable for this football team. But when Marshall fans get to this point in the season and you approach November 14th and that game is coming up, the one that's closest to it, when we all pause for a moment and honor the 1970 victims of the plane crash, remember the 71 team and what it took just to get the program back on the field, it helps put 2-7 in perspective, doesn't it? Because when you look at where the program is now, 2-7 is unacceptable. Winning matters, and that's all that matters now. Kind of like in the movie, in the scene where Matthew McConaughey as Coach Jack Lingle says, someday we're going to be that football program where nothing matters but winning. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But this week helps to put into perspective the Marshall football program. Because it would have been easy, wouldn't it have, in 71, to not have a football team, to discontinue the program, to be like an ODU, restart the program 20, 30, 40 years down the road and be in its infancy. So when you stop and think about where the Marshall football program came from, it really helps to put things in perspective. And Marshall is like every other football program now, almost, because winning is what matters. 2-7 is not acceptable. Just showing up and having a team is not the standard. The standard is 10 wins. The standard is a conference championship. The standard is a bowl game. The standard could be and should be to compete for that coveted group of five championship, if you will. But when you stop and think and stop and put it all into perspective, having a team, having this program, having this tradition is what matters. And yes, winning is what it's all about. And 2-7 is not acceptable. But when you stop and pause on November 14th or the game before November 14th or the game right after, whichever it is, it helps to bring it all into perspective just a little bit more. It's the Stampede Podcast presented by WVMetroNews.com and the West Virginia Metro News Radio Network. Got a special edition of the show. I mentioned it in the open. And I was thinking about what to do this week, how to remember and honor the 75 who died in 1970 on the plane crash and those who were involved. And I was trying to think, because the story's been told so many times and by so many people. And I went back and I was just kind of leafing through my archives and I remembered a 2011 interview that I did with the late, great Boz Johnson. And in 2011, and we've all heard Boz tell the story over and over, but during that interview, what came out that I kind of, it was a throwaway question for me at the end was, Boz, are you going to go to the memorial service? He said, no. Never been, and he never went, as far as I know. It was too hard. He knew too many people. He never actually sat down, and he mentions this in the interview, which I'm going to play in its entirety, that he never stopped to count how many people he knew on that plane. It was too difficult, and he carried that with him for 40 years. There are a lot of people who carried that pain with them and never really opened up about it until the movie was made, until We Are Marshall was into production, Ashes to Glory, the documentary, when it was made. I think those helped people to open up a little bit about what happened, because they carried it with them for 30, 35, 40 years. And there are people today who still carry that with them. And I didn't know it at the time, and maybe now that I'm older and wiser, I didn't realize the treasure that I have in this 9-minute interview with Boz Johnson. We've lost Boz, obviously, since then. And I thought, what better way to honor those who passed away in the plane crash, those who were involved with it, then why not just go ahead and play the entire interview with Boz Johnson? And that's what we're going to do. Talk to Boz Johnson back in 2011 of his recollections of what happened back on November 14th, 1970.
It was a very normal day, and weekends, you know, are not noted for generating a lot of news. And as a matter of fact, it was a Saturday, and therefore, as the news director, I was off. I wasn't working. And the phone rang, and it was Jerry Sander, the reporter anchor for that Saturday night. And Jerry said, there's been a plane crash. We don't know what one it is, but I wanted to alert you. And as soon as I hung up, there was another call. And it was a lady on the phone, and she said, I have to swear you to secrecy. You must not tell what I'm about to tell you, because my husband called me from the airport and told me, and if the word ever got out he'd done that, he'd be fired. And then she told me it was the Marshall plane. And from then on, it just was exactly what you'd expect in a time of crisis. Roger O'Neill and I went out to the scene. He shot for me. I shot for him. It was grisly, but you know, I'm rambling on you. You interrupt me when you want to.
Well, when you got the first phone call, and I've not been in news that long, but I've got those types of calls. Hey, something big is happening. It sounds bad, but you kind of get that adrenaline pumping through your system. What was it like when that second call came and you heard Marshall University on the other end?
Well, I knew then I had to get to the station in a hurry. Fortunately, I was dressed. But I went down to the station, and then Roger O'Neill, now semi-retired from NBC after a long career there, Roger and I went out to the crash site. And we were shooting and interviewing, and there is one thing that sticks in my mind, and that was, 41 years ago,
mm-hmm.
that I will never forget. I had the camera in my hand, shooting a little bit of cover stuff, and I kicked something on the ground, and I looked down, and there was the equipment bag of the Marshall photographer. And I knew that's what it was, because it hadn't been but a matter of days since he and I had sat together in the press box of the old Memorial Fieldhouse watching an exhibition basketball game, and I had kicked that same box, the same suitcase, and then had to apologize to him, and there it was.
Boz Johnson joining us, retired WSEZ anchor who covered the Marshall plane crash. How many of the victims on the plane did you personally know?
It's an interesting question. I have never counted it. I have never wanted to know. Of course, the broadcaster, Keith Morehouse's father, and a number, the automobile dealer, the political leader, several of the doctors. I don't know how many, and I don't, even to this day, 41 years later, I don't want to know. A lot of them.
When we cover these types of events in the media, it's easy to get callous, become numb, cover it as an event. Were you able to separate yourself, or was there a moment where you took a look around and it all became very personal and all kind of sunk in?
The time on the air, you really get lost in trying to get the material out and on the air. But once I got off the air and got back home and found out that my wife had had it much worse than I, she had gone up into the next block and brought home a friend of one of our daughters whose mother and father had been killed on the crash. She had it much worse than I did. But the truth is, I did crack up afterward. And it hadn't been very long since my dentist had both hands in my mouth, I think, at the time, and told me of sitting in the living room with his girlfriend, soon to be his wife, while I was telling them that her mother and father were dead. And when you realize that later on, it is difficult, and it is very personal. As a matter of fact, to try to remind myself as if I needed it, I went through a wonderful documentary called Ashes to Glory that Debbie Wittick, that's her married name, but at any rate, that Debbie and her husband had produced, Ashes to Glory. And I found myself with eyes that were quite wet. But then, after it's all over, the thing that comes most prominent in my memory is that Dottie and I went to 13 funerals in 3 days. It's very personal. You know, at Marshall turns over its population, its student population, every 4 years or so. Well, that doesn't happen in Huntington. So Huntington has never gotten over it, and that's not fair, has never forgotten that plane crash of 41 years ago. It is just so much a part of the community. You lost an athletic director. You lost the coaches. You lost the businessman. You lost a lot of doctors and their wives, the automobile dealer, the broadcaster. A community just doesn't recover from that. You live with it.
Some of my friends and I, we were talking back when we were at college attending Marshall University, and they're filming the movie, and there's a lot of references to being a small, knit community. And, of course, being from West Virginia, Huntington's the big city, you know. But for the four of us that were standing in the room talking with each other, as we started to talk, we realized how personally connected we were to an event that happened, you know, long before we were born. I had an uncle who was a freshman on the 70 team, played for the Young Thundering Herd. My friend's father was attending Marshall University that year. My fiance's father was attending Marshall University that year. We sat there for a minute and went, wow, we weren't even around, and we have personal connections to this tragedy. Everybody, it seems like, if you're associated with the Marshall community, there's a personal connection to that. And like I said in the open before, by the time you graduate from the university, I think you have a different point of view than when you came into the university.
And I think that's fair. Just add one thing. This is not unusual. It is almost to be expected. I'm a native of West Virginia, born in Charleston, went to WVU and Marshall, lived in Huntington for all these years, as well as Bluefield and so forth. Do you recognize that here in Appalachia, we are much less likely to move away? Across the country, it is very common for people to move 4, 5, 6 times as they are going through careers and so forth. That happens less in Appalachia. Therefore, it is not at all unusual for you to be in your situation and to have all those ties to that team or for me.
What does it mean to you? We're speaking with Bonds Johnson, retired news anchor for WSAZ-TV, covered the plane crash back in 1970. What does it mean to you and the people of Huntington? It gets said a lot, but try to put into words, what does it mean that there's a football team that goes out on the field each and every Saturday wearing that green and white uniform?
Well, it all began with Xavier University. I wonder if everybody remembers that the Young Thundering Herd, when they came back, you know, a bunch of freshmen, a few sophomores who hadn't been with the team, you know, all of that green as grass, and beat a substantial opponent. And they, you can break down in tears if you choose, because the children who lost their parents were quoted in that documentary as saying, "You know, I just knew that they were watching." Well, you know, that's very moving, and it continues to be moving. And as long as the children and the grandchildren of the people who were involved continue to live around here, the impact is going to be strong.
Boss Johnson, retired WSAC news anchor, thanks for joining us on the program and talking about this. Of course, the fountain ceremony comes up on Monday. Do you attend that regularly?
Nope.
Never been?
Never.
Can't do it?
I have just been better off not going.
Boss Johnson, thanks for taking some time with us talking about the plane crash. And enjoy. Take it easy. Don't work too hard. I know you've got a very busy schedule.
Thank you very much.
That's Boss Johnson, an interview I did with him back in 2011, right around the plane crash anniversary, in 2011. And we've lost Boss since then. But like I said, it was a treasure I didn't realize I was getting at the time that, we might bring back year after year, because nobody tells the story better. I did read Chuck Landon earlier this week in his column when he spoke with head coach of the Herd basketball team, Dan D'Antoni. And that was a great piece to get a perspective I don't know that I'd ever thought about before, was the perspective of the basketball team. And Ryan pointed this out, and I guess I've done the same thing, kind of compartmentalize that as a football tragedy, football story that involved everybody else in the community. But then to stop and think, well, how did that impact the basketball team, the baseball team, the athletics department as a whole? It had a tremendous impact, because those boosters on the plane that day weren't just boosters of the football team. They were athletic program boosters. And nothing was the same after November 14th, 1970. And I've already had folks come up to me this week, and it happens every year, and I've written about it and talked about it on this program. They'll say, why are you still making a big deal out? It's been 46 years already. Well, that's the reason you make a big deal out of it. It's been 46 years. You don't want to ever forget, because eventually the firsthand experience, the people who were there experienced, lived it. It's just like World War II. We're going to lose them eventually. And we don't ever want to forget what happened. But at the same time, you look at how closely we're all connected to this single tragedy. As a fan, as a student, I can remember when the movie was being made back in 06, and the McConaughey's out promoting it, and people keep referencing this small town in West Virginia, and somebody said, well, Huntington's not that small. And I said, yeah, but look how closely we're all connected. In a room of six or seven people, all of us were only one person removed from the experience. My uncle was a freshman at Marshall in 1970. A member of the football team, played on the 1971 team. We all had people either there or connected in some way, and we all have this personal connection to it. And you don't get it when you're there if you're a student at Marshall as a freshman, but I think if you're there for a couple of years, it sinks in. It sinks in what it means to be part of that community and forever be part of that community. It's the Stampede Podcast presented by WVMetroNews.com. West Virginia Metro News Radio Network. Do want to talk a little football as we head into this matchup with FIU. First of all, did you see this story? Jonnu Smith, one of the biggest forces on the FIU offense this season, is out for this game. Out for the rest of the year. College career is probably over after a domestic dispute with his girlfriend. Mary Gasper, who's 5 months pregnant with Smith's child, dumped a pot of boiling water on Smith in his dorm room on Halloween. This according to the Miami Herald. This just coming out this week. Smith suffered burns to his head, neck, back, shoulder, and arm. Gasper's charged with aggravated battery and has since been released on a pretrial release order. Gasper told police that she and Smith had been arguing throughout the day about the attention that Smith was paying to her and their relationship. She said she was feeling extreme emotional and stressed. She decided to put on a boiling pot of water in Smith's dorm and then pour it onto Smith. Gasper also told police that when Smith's reaction to having the boiling water poured onto him was not strong enough, she began hitting him with open hands. I don't even know what to make of that. That's the first injury of its kind I think I've ever covered related to a football game. So, no Jonnu Smith. Doug Smock this week finally gave in to temptation and decided to compare the 2016 herd to the 3-win 2007 team. And if you were looking for some optimism from Douglas, well, you didn't get it. Offense, he says there's no contest. Juracek compares to Cody Slate, but he's given the nod to Bernie Morris. Or is it Bernard Morris at the time? Morris over Chase Litton. And of course, Darius Marshall was in the backfield at the time for the herd. Mario Harvey was a young guy. C.J. Spillman on that team as well in 2007. Let's see. Horrendous results. That 2007 team did lose to New Hampshire. Albert McClellan was out that year with a knee injury. he gives the nod to the 2017 38-13. Not exactly the pick-me-up you're looking for at this point in the year. It's a good column. In the mythical game, Douglas picks the 2007 team. Look, I wish I could sit here and pinpoint one reason, and we've gone over this ad nauseum, one reason or one aspect that you could pin this season to. To be honest, I don't know where it came from. Didn't see it coming. Did I expect things to be a little bit down defensively? Yes. Look what you lost from last year's team. But what I didn't expect, and I can't really comprehend, is the total lack of offensive production. Last week's game was as bad of a Marshall offense as I have ever seen. One drive worked. One drive. The 93-yard touchdown drive in the first quarter. Otherwise, nothing. Three and out. Three and out. Three and out. And to me, it's inexplicable because I see talent out there. Tony Pittman, I think, is a talented running back. Hylink Foster, we know, can get the job done. Chase Litton, go back and look at Litton's numbers from a year ago. So why is there this tremendous drop-off? Is it the receivers? Are the receivers not getting open? Is Litton not making the right reads? Is the offensive line not protecting, not opening up the holes? Well, it's all of the above right now. So you can't really pin it on one player, one group. Now, Bill Legg had some interesting things to say during his media availability this week. Said, hey, one of the things is we're continuously juggling the lineup. You're working in six receivers and three or four different backs, and that could be having an effect. But, there was a big but in that statement, that adjustment period should not be taking as long as it is for Marshall right now. Now, you miss Selby. Van Horn has not been healthy all season long. What could have been with a healthy right side of the line? Fred Bonneau had a terrible game against ODU. Guys were getting around the edge. The defense, for as bad as it has been at times this year, there have been times when the defense has stiffened up a little bit in the red zone. You know, Marshall had a chance to get back in the ball game in the start of the third quarter. Defense got a couple of stops. Offense did nothing. Got the ball to start the third quarter, three and out. Now, I don't know what this team will do with the last four games. Middle Tennessee, FIU coming up, I guess last three games, and Western Kentucky. I don't know what this team will do with those games. Can it win three straight to end the year on a high note? Possibly. It needs to do something to carry some sort of optimism into the offseason to get you through those practices, to get you through those weight room workouts. Stampede Podcast presented by WVMetroNews.com, West Virginia Metro News Radio Network. On the flip side of that, and I've been just rolling this idea around in my head, not a conspiracy theory by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe this season acts as a wake-up call to everybody on that team that you've got to work a little harder. Not accusing them of not working hard or putting in the effort, but maybe you got to push yourself that much more to become that much better. Because the conference, while not great, is improving. ODU is getting better, folks. Charlotte is getting better. Are they great? No, but they are getting better and will continue. Middle Tennessee is going to be a good football team. They've got Brent Stock still. He'll be back next year. They'll be fine. Western Kentucky is going to be a good football team. But maybe this is the wake-up call that you need to come back, put in that extra effort that pushes you over the edge. Do I think Marshall can come back in 2017 and regain form? Absolutely, I do. I'm not one of these people who are going to sit here and tell you this is going to be a 2 or 3 year process to rebuild the program. I don't think it is. I think it's an offseason to get some things settled. I think some competition at certain positions will also help. But this year has been inexplicable for me because I just did not see it coming. Did not see a 2-7 at this point in the year. Now, if you'd told me they would be 4-4, might have bought that. 5-3, okay. Because of the non-conference portion of the schedule. But 2-7? No, didn't see that coming. But as I said at the beginning of the show, this week helps put even 2-7 in perspective. It could be a lot worse. It could be a lot worse. It's the Stampede Podcast presented by WVMetroNews.com and the West Virginia Metro News Radio Network. I hope you enjoyed the interview from 2011 with Boz Johnson. Again, it's a treasure that I will hang on to, that I got that opportunity to listen to him recall those events. And nobody can tell it better, so why not let the man handle it? It's the Stampede Podcast presented by WVMetroNews.com and the West Virginia Metro News Radio Network. My thanks to the crew, Clark, Crystal, Ryan. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll be back next week. We'll do it all again. Stampede Podcast presented by WVMetroNews.com and the West Virginia Metro News Radio Network.